Hey, Avani Dias here. Thanks for tuning in to the Hack Podcast. And on this episode, Super Tuesday, there's a lot going on in US politics because there's an election coming up later this year. But this is the best guess we'll have of who will run against Donald Trump. So it's a really important day. And we're going to talk to young people who are over there in America. They're watching the results come in live and see what they think about the next election and who can maybe beat Trump, if that's even a possibility. Plus, on this episode, you're going to learn about coronavirus tracking. Yeah, there are detectives, basically, who are health workers. And when someone gets diagnosed with COVID-19, the technical term for coronavirus, they have to go and find every single person that person has been in contact with. And when you think of who you've seen in the past 2 weeks or so and been face to face with, you can obviously identify your partner, your friends, your family, but then there are so many strangers as well, like people you sit next to on the bus or the person who served you at a cafe. Yeah, they're going around finding all those people. So we're going to find out about that. Plus another segment, Hack Investigates. It's where we answer the questions that Triple J listeners have asked us, and nothing is too wild. Later, we're going to find out if breaking the seal is actually a thing.
Hack!
I think it's rigged against Bernie, but maybe I'll pull it through. It was rigged against me 4 years ago, and I pulled it through.
On Triple J.
You probably know later this year, Donald Trump is facing another election in America, and I've been keeping you updated when you need to pay attention. Right now is one of those times, because today is the biggest indicator we'll get so far of who will go up against Donald Trump for the Democrats. 14 states are voting in mini elections known as primaries for the next Democratic candidate, and it's all happening at the same time. It's called Super Tuesday, and it also matters because it gives us a big hint of how this candidate will go when the actual election against Trump takes place. So here's Tim Swanson.
Last time on America's Next Top Democrat. After the audience-submitted voting system failed in the Iowa challenge, Senator Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg both claimed the win. In a lucky break for former Vice President Joe Biden, barely getting any roses in the first few weeks, he finally got his single date in South Carolina. The moderate bachelorettes have chosen to pledge their allegiance to Joe, but in today's super challenge, an intruder has been brought into the house.
American politics and primaries can often feel far too much like a reality TV show. So for a more sensible recap of what's been going on, let's get stuck into it. And a quick note before we start, these mini-elections run over months. The better you do in each state's mini-election, called a primary or a caucus, the more delegates you pick up. The more delegates, the better chance you have of taking on Trump in November. First things first, we've had major contenders drop out in the last few days, and I'll get into why in just a sec.
We have some breaking news on the campaign trail just hours before Super Tuesday. Senator Amy Klobuchar will end her presidential campaign tonight and endorse Joe Biden.
Overnight, Pete Buttigieg dropping out of the race for president.
I will no longer seek to be the 2020 Democratic nominee for president, but I will do everything in my power to ensure that we have a new Democratic president come January.
Senator Amy Klobuchar and former Mayor Pete Buttigieg both ended their bids. So too did billionaire Tom Steyer, but he really wasn't doing so well. See, the Democrats are essentially in a contest between progressives and moderate voters. Progressives are flocking to Bernie Sanders. You know, that I am once again asking you, guy you've seen memes of. He's done super well in the first three caucuses and primaries in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. And while former Vice President Joe Biden, a moderate, wasn't looking very good in those races, he smashed the most recent vote.
CNN projects that Joe Biden is the winner in South Carolina. This is the former vice president's first primary victory. He was counting on South Carolina to help keep his campaign going.
Momentum is really damn important in these contests. So ahead of Super Tuesday, moderates Senator Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg decided to drop out and get behind Joe Biden.
I think this is very significant. It does not guarantee
Joe Biden the nomination. It doesn't guarantee him many wins tomorrow, though I think he will get some, particularly in the South. But he was given the last rites just, 10 days ago.
So you've now got the former vice president up against Bernie Sanders. In the progressive camp, you've also got Elizabeth Warren, who is certainly polling well behind those two. And now for the intruder bit, former New York mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg.
But when New York suffered the terrible tragedy of 9/11, he took charge, becoming a three-term mayor who brought a city back from the ashes.
Bloomberg entered the race late, so this is the first time he's appearing on ballots, vying to be the Democratic Party's nominee for president. He's spent something like $400 million on TV ads alone. But today is a real test of that ad money, whether that translates into votes, and whether moderates rallying around Biden will help him pick up against Sanders after a rough few weeks. Hack.
Triple J.
Tim Swanson with that story, and he had way too much turning the Democratic primaries into a reality TV show. And yeah, this is big because the person who wins this race will eventually go up against Trump later this year. And let's find out what young Democrats think about those chances. Joshua Harris-Till is the president of the Young Democrats. He's in Oklahoma right now, which is one of the states that voted today. And it's past midnight. He's been watching the results come in live, so we really appreciate you coming on the show. Joshua, how are you feeling about the results that have come through so far?
You know, they're really interesting. I think that a lot of people expected Bernie to kind of take the night. And what we've seen is Joe Biden has literally racked up states throughout the night. And he's competing in states where we thought Bernie Sanders would really kind of take the lead, especially namely Texas. Him winning Minnesota was huge. That was something that a lot of people didn't see happening. And so, like, these are really significant wins for him.
Who do you personally think has the best chance of winning against Trump?
I'm going to have to say Joe Biden, just because not only are you going to have Joe Biden and whoever he picks as his running mate, I fully believe that you're going to have Barack Obama and Michelle Obama come back and actually, you know, hit the campaign trail with them, almost like it's four people running against Trump.
And what about Joe Biden's, I guess, performance over the past couple of weeks? People have said he's performed badly in debates, especially compared to Bernie Sanders. He hasn't been as out there and charismatic and in the faces of American people. Do you think he's got the right persona to actually win in the end?
I think that we would love to have that Barack Obama personality come back, but we weren't going to get it with any of these candidates. And so we saw the field kind of dwindling down until the big show was going to be between Bernie and Joe Biden. And what a lot of people think about is who's going to be helpful in winning votes for, like, U.S. Senate seats or U.S. House seats as far as keeping Congress in down ballot races.
And in terms of Joe Biden, you reckon he is the best chance to go up against Trump. Is that because you think he'll get those moderate Americans to actually swing from Trump to actually vote for him instead?
I think so. I think that, you know, for those moderates, when they're looking at Joe Biden and they're looking at Trump, they're not seeing some people who are diametrically opposed like Bernie and Trump would be. They're seeing somebody who's different, somebody who would probably tweet less and thus be a little less embarrassing. And that's kind of the stability that the country wants.
But the tweeting is so good for us here to watch.
It is horrible for us. We dread it every day. And then we have to check because we're like, surely he didn't actually say that. And then it's like Covifi or whatever is on Twitter that day.
Yeah, Josh, I do want to know, though, isn't Bernie a good candidate in terms of being so far on the other end of Trump, actually having progressive policies, things like Medicare for All, which we in Australia have had for years. So we think that's pretty surprising that that's even a policy that you guys are considering still in America. But yeah, doesn't he have enough to rally that support by being a point of difference, whereas Biden may be too centrist?
I think so, and I know that a lot of young people feel that way, but I think that until we get to the point that young people are turning out in the numbers that they should be turning out, there's going to be a lot of moderates who are making the decisions. And for older people, they just weren't going to gather around Bernie for some reason. It's not about his policies. I think he is a great candidate. I think he's taken exactly the strategy we should be taking, which is go for broke. And if we fall somewhere in the middle, then we're 10 times better than where we're currently at. But it's about being able to get elected first before you can get any of those policy changes done. And unfortunately, I think people are more willing to accept a moderate than they are a democratic socialist, as he calls himself.
You are listening to Hack on Triple J. We're talking to Joshua Harris-Till, who is the president of the Young Democrats. It's very late where he is in Oklahoma. He's still waiting for the numbers to come in about who the Democratic candidate will be. And this is the person who will go up against Donald Trump later this year. Someone's texted, Sanders is a communist. Let's be clear. Radical redistribution of wealth sounds great if you're a college student with none to start with. But for an average worker who puts in the hard yards for their assets and wages, they don't want to give away their life in taxes. Someone else says Biden versus Trump will result in a landslide Republican election win. Josh, you just mentioned young people going out to vote. And I think it's fair to say in Australia, we have compulsory voting in elections. Over there in America, you don't. What do you think is going to be the thing that will rally young people the most to actually go and vote in an election later this year?
I mean, what we're going to need more than anything is unity within the party. We have to have Bernie Sanders coming out there to stump for Biden if Biden wins, and vice versa if Bernie wins. We have to have all of the candidates who are running for office on the campaign trail again, talking to their supporters, saying, hey, it's imperative that we vote. And I think that is the only way that we're going to see, the turnout that we need necessary to take down Trump.
And Josh, before we let you go, you're a young person in America. It's fair to flag that you're obviously a Democrat, so that's where your politics align. But what would another 4 years of Donald Trump look like? Because, you know, at this stage, it is pretty likely he'll win the next election, don't you reckon?
It's a game of turnout. So I don't know that he does win the election. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, but the Electoral College obviously kept her from becoming the president. So did the Democrats learn from their mistakes is going to be the biggest factor. 4 more years of Trump, I think, destabilized the economy. I think that Obama put in place such a great economy. He wasn't able to break it completely, but you've definitely seen it plateauing in terms of the progress that it should have been making. So now we have dealing with the coronavirus and the way that's hit our stock markets, dealing with a lot of his policies, the tax break that he gave to the riches in the country who hurt the middle class. Like, these are all things that are about to start showing the symptoms as far as the country is concerned. So I think they are going to hurt us a lot. But now with this impeachment win he has and what he's been doing with the judicial system, it's just going to get worse and worse. So I am not very happy about thinking about 4 more years. I might come out there and visit you guys.
Cool. Joshua Harris-Till, president of the Young Democrats. It's very late over there, so we really appreciate you coming on the show. And yeah, just to give you some results to update you, right now Joe Biden is in the lead. He has 414 pledged delegates, should I say. So that's the count. And Bernie's 334.
No question that the mortality is focused towards the elderly and people with illness.
On Triple J.
All right, you've been diagnosed with coronavirus or COVID-19, and then a health officer comes and sits next to you. Picture it happening. Their job is to stop the disease from spreading further by finding everyone you've come face to face with for more than 15 minutes over the past 2 weeks. It's easy to think about the people you see all the time, like your colleagues, your family, your friends, whatever. But then there are the strangers, the person who served you when you got coffee in the morning or the guy next to you on the train. We come to face with a lot of people. Our reporter James Pertil has been looking into this high stakes race. James, not many people know that this is going on behind the scenes where health workers are actually tracking down strangers that have come into contact with people who have been diagnosed with coronavirus. Can you explain how this process known as contact tracing works?
Yeah, I'd never heard about this. And with coronavirus, I've kind of gone deep into learning about it more. So right now there's teams in every state and territory, public health workers who are like hitting the phones and on their computers trying to track down people who could be carrying the virus unsuspectingly. You know, it's kind of like Facebook stalking in a way. Like, you know, you're trying to find out who a person has come into contact with while they might have been contagious. And then you're trying to find those people who could just be random contacts they met on the way. So if they're on a flight, it's easy because there's a list of passengers. But if it's on the bus, then like, what do you do then?
Yeah, you don't know who you're sitting next to.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I just think of it like, how would I do it? You know, it's like CCTV. I don't know. Like, you maybe put up a notice at the bus station. Like, when you actually think about it, it's really hard to find people.
Totally. And how long do these contact tracers have to actually trace this stuff down?
Coronavirus spreads like fairly quickly, like it spreads as fast as the flu. So, you know, they're just trying to do it. It's like they're working 24/7, basically trying to like ring fence each person. So you go to their direct contacts, you make sure they don't have it. Then you go to their contacts and make sure it hasn't passed on to them. So it's a matter of days, really.
Yeah, and you spoke to a professor who's actually one of these contact tracers, and it sounds like they're kind of these behind-the-scenes detectives, right?
It's a real sleuthing sort of exercise, and, you know, a lot of shoe leather gets sort of used in trying to contact everybody. Yeah. But we have a team of people going, you know, 24/7 at the moment doing the laboratory testing. The ministry have a team going essentially 24/7 doing contact tracing and planning and all of that sort of stuff.
So that's Professor Dominic Dwyer. He's a medical virologist and the New South Wales Health Director of Public Health Pathology, and he's actually doing this job day to day, which is so important. In Australia, we've seen situations, as you said, people on a flight going from Melbourne to the Gold Coast and two people were found on there, and it's obviously easier to find people when you've got their ticket details and stuff like that. But then a couple of days ago, there was that Gold Coast beautician. Tell us how the contact traces worked in that case.
She got off her flight. She went to work. She worked through the morning and saw like 30 to 40 people at the beautician.
Pretty busy day.
Yeah, a busy day, unfortunately. And it was at a busy shopping mall too. And then she felt a bit sick, so she went home, took herself to the hospital, and she was diagnosed. So as soon as she was diagnosed, she obviously received treatment, but then she had an interview by a contact tracer and they were like, what have you been doing in the last 24 hours, or, you know, might have been the last 14 days, but in Australia, the last 24 hours. And she said, oh, I've seen all these people. So then they said about trying to find them. I think it's actually going to be quite hard. And just the other day, they put out a notice saying, you know, if you've been to this beauty parlor in the last few days, come to us. So clearly they haven't been able to track down everyone. Apparently most people have about 9 close contacts. Maybe this beautician had a few more because of her work, but I guess that's like your family, your workmates, people you sort of are going to spend, I think the distance is like 1 meter for 15 minutes face to face. Some people have a lot more. There was a case in Korea of a woman who went to a church service and gave coronavirus to something like 30 people.
And that's crazy.
She must have just been coughing everywhere. That kind of event is known as a super spreader event. And one interesting thing that came up in the research is that in Australia, it's actually quite hard to find people because we're not a surveillance state.
But people are hard to find. You know, in a country like Australia where there's free movement of people, it actually can be quite hard to find people, particularly when you want to do it quickly.
That's Professor Dominic Dwyer again, a medical virologist who is doing this contact tracing, really important stuff we're talking about on Triple J Hack, with James Pertil, one of our reporters who's looked into this behind-the-scenes process that helps contain coronavirus around the world, but not many people know about it. James, it's interesting that Australia's population is so much smaller than China's, yet it's easier for contact tracers in China to do this job.
Yeah, I've just got this image of like a group of dudes going on a road trip to like WA or something like that, and like how hard would they be to find because they're out somewhere in the middle of Australia. In China, and Dominic Dwyer, who you heard there, he actually worked in China during the SARS outbreak, so a few years ago. So he's quite familiar with the level of surveillance they have. And he was telling me that they, you know, that they knew where every person was at any moment of the day. They could say, oh, this person's at work, this person's home. Actually, in one case in China for coronavirus, they were able to track the movement of a person through a city and then alert people around them that they may have been exposed to coronavirus, and they could do that minute by minute. So, yeah, in terms of finding people who may have coronavirus, surveillance state's pretty good at that. As Dominic says, big ethical questions around that though.
Facial recognition, population movements, all of that sort of stuff are much easier to control in China than they are in Australia.
Yeah, I guess it's crazy that, you know, there is that surveillance, but then it's making this containment slow down. And we've just heard the news today as well that China has managed to slow down the containment of coronavirus, which is a big step forward for that country. But that's due to a number of different aggressive measures, according to researchers. James, right now, cases in Australia are pretty low, so we're pretty lucky in that sense. But what if this does start to spread much further? Does that mean contact tracing won't even be useful anymore?
Yeah, so like contact tracing is a lot of work. So if there's thousands of cases, there's no way contact tracers can follow them all, in which case, you know, that would be abandoned for the areas where there's a lot of cases. But then there might be areas of Australia where we don't want coronavirus to get to or where it's not already. And then you can do contact tracing for people who've turned up there.
All right, super interesting story, James. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Hack on Triple J.
That is Triple J Hack reporter James Pertile. And you can read more about that crazy story. It's so thrilling. It reads like a sci-fi novel or something, but it's real life. That's on the Triple J Hack website. Someone's texted, can't even remember what I had for lunch, let alone who I saw 2 weeks ago. And yeah, as coronavirus keeps developing, we know it is something you may have questions about. So shoot me a text, 0439757555, if there are specific things you want us to look into. But one major question we keep getting is, should I be going overseas this year? So many people have trips coming up soon. And we spoke to one of Australia's leading virologists, Ian McKay, yesterday, and he said, you know, I don't want to tell you what to do, but if you're thinking about it, think about health insurance and whether you can get medical treatment over there. So let's talk to Craig Platt, who is from Traveller, which is an online travel magazine, and he knows what you can do if you are planning a trip. Craig, are there places we should be flat out avoiding for trips this year?
Well, I think China's the obvious one. I think the Australian government's kind of Smart Traveller website has raised the risk level to, or the safety recommendation to, do not travel to China right now. So that's a pretty clear signal that you know, you shouldn't be going there. I think maybe some other countries as well. Obviously, South Korea's had a pretty big outbreak, but at the same time, it is a very advanced country, and it seems to be doing a lot to shut it down. One of the reasons why they say that the numbers are so high in South Korea is because South Korea has tested more people than just about any other country outside China. Italy, you might just want to wait and see what happens in Italy. Iran is probably worth avoiding, mainly because the outbreak's been biggish there, but the death rate's been quite high in Iran. So, you know, healthcare is probably not as good as it could be in some other countries.
Craig, the big thing here is travel insurance. And I was reading that unless you've booked before late January, then you won't be covered if you get coronavirus overseas. So what should you be doing if you haven't booked before then?
Yeah, I think that's the real problem for a lot of travellers. I think especially for younger people, the chances of you getting really sick and requiring hospitalisation from the coronavirus is actually very low. It really is seemingly really only dangerous to people over the age of 65. I think 80 to 90% of the deaths have been people age 70 or above. So where you're potentially running into an issue, mainly as a younger traveller, is not so much the risk that the coronavirus might have on your health, but the risk on how it might disrupt your holiday. Because if you come down with symptoms, you might not even have coronavirus, you might just have a cold or a flu, you may find your holiday being disrupted because you might get temperature checked at an airport, you might find yourself in quarantine. Now, that might only be for 24 hours, but that might be enough for you to miss your connecting flight, and that might screw up your entire holiday plan. If travel insurance is not covering you for coronavirus, that's it. You've got to book a new flight. It's going to cost you a lot of money. So I think for a lot of travellers, that's the issue that's going to be bigger than actually worrying about, oh, will I get sick? I mean, you're probably just as likely to get regular influenza as you are coronavirus. I mean, that's regular influenza is still everywhere. So maybe what you need to consider is look into perhaps booking flexible flights. Instead of buying the cheapest fare possible, buy one that will let you change it or cancel it without copping any fees. And just look at your holiday plans and how you might be able to make them flexible if something does go wrong.
All right, Craig Platt, thank you so much for your advice there. That's Craig from traveller.com.au.
Is it legal to go topless at the beach or park?
Where did all the goths go?
Why does a pizza come in a box when it's a circle and is cut into triangles?
If someone's born deaf, what language do they think in?
Someone should look into that.
Hack Investigates.
All right, it's time for another Hack Investigates. It's where you send us questions on what you want us to look into, and we have been smashed with responses. Everything from why does water taste different depending on where you are, or why do some people have an internal monologue, or my personal favourite from one person, why won't anyone date me? We're getting to the bottom of your questions, and this one is something I've been wondering my entire adult life. So you're out with people, you're having drinks, it gets to a stage where you really want to pee, but you think, no, I'm going to break the seal. And then you'll have to pee all night, so you hold it in. Andy asked us on the Triple J Hack Instagram, is breaking the seal legit? Our reporter Joe Lauder has been looking into this very important question. Joe, what's happening when you first need to pee when you're drinking?
Hey, Av, yeah, this is why we get into journalism, right? Answering these
toilet
questions.
Paper and peeing.
Yeah, look, so there's a couple of things to keep in mind here as we unpack this question. Firstly, for everyone to keep in mind, the average bladder holds on average about 300 to 400 mils of water. That's about one schooner. So think about it as a matter of physics here. But this idea of breaking the seal, it's this thing that there is a delay and then you go the first time and, you know, the floodgates open. Firstly, there's a lag time from when you start drinking and when the effects of alcohol kick in. And I spoke to Dr. Nicole Lee. She's an adjunct professor at the National Drug Research Institute about this to start with.
But that effect takes a little while to kick in. So you start drinking and the diuretic effect kind of kicks in a little bit later. So by the time you need to pee first and go to the toilet first, your bladder's already started to fill up quite quickly. So after that, you need to urinate much more frequently.
Right, so that's Dr. Nicole Lee. So Joe, essentially, you do need to pee because there's liquid in your bladder, but there's also something going on in your brain, right, when we're drinking?
Yeah, and as Dr. Lee said, it is this diuretic effect. And so alcohol has a direct effect on how much you need to pee. So diuretic is basically something that causes your body to lose more fluid than what you'd usually do. So for every 200 mils you drink when you're drinking, you basically pee out a bit more than over, it's like 320 mils, so about an extra third that's going out. And what happens is when you ingest alcohol, it blocks this hormone called vasopressin. And it's also called the antidiuretic hormone, or ADH. But basically, this hormone regulates how much urine you produce from the kidneys to the bladder. And the best way to explain this is what your brain is releasing at night to stop you from having to get up all night and having to pee constantly. So it's holding more water in the kidneys. So when you're drinking, your brain isn't producing this vasopressin. It's basically just telling your body to send all that liquid that you're drinking straight on through the bladder.
That's so weird. So you're in this vicious cycle. You're drinking more than usual and your brain's telling you to pee a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Because the other thing is, like, for most people on an average day, like, you're not sitting at your desk just smashing pints of water. So you're bringing more liquid into your body. And then alcohol is a diuretic, so about an extra third is going out. And that's also basically why we get a hangover.
And a lot of people hold it in because they're like, I don't want to break the seal. So is that something you should or shouldn't do?
No. So basically, apparently no, because one, the expert advice is you can get a UTI if you try and hold it in much. So we're not going to advise that. The other thing is you can apparently, in really extreme cases, damage the sphincter. So people don't hold it in. No, that's a bad idea.
All right. So the big question is breaking the seal an actual thing, Joe?
No. Alcohol does affect how much you need to pee and how much, yeah, basically how much urine you're producing. But there isn't this magical spell that is broken the first time you go to the toilet. So no breaking the seal, Andy, is not a thing.
Oh, thank you so much for looking into that bizarro question from Andy. But I think a lot of people would be like, yeah, I think I've got a lot of use out of that, especially when you're like at a festival or a club and you're waiting in line to go to the toilet. It's so annoying. But yeah, shoot us a text 043975755. What do you want us to investigate? Any question is totally fine.
Hack on Triple J.
Some pretty funny texts came in about tracking coronavirus. Someone said, apparently toilet paper makes you immune from the virus, which is pretty funny because there's no toilet paper around. And yeah, it's not doing anything to really help you with coronavirus. Someone else says, I went to Mardi Gras on Saturday. How would you ever find anyone that I came into contact with that night? There were thousands of people. And yeah, in regards to traveling, someone says, got home from my honeymoon in Thailand 2 weeks ago and got isolated for a week because the GP thought my wife's bronchitis was coronavirus. So a lot to think about if you've got a travel plan coming up. That is all we've got time for in this episode. I'll catch you next time.